The following presentation is brought to you by the Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to actor Peter Capaldi, star of a new documentary titled Inside the Mind of Leonardo da Vinci 3D. Stick around. After a respectful amount of time has passed, I will also talk to the 12th Doctor about what it's like to take Clara Oswald out for a spin. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Dailymotion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you prefer to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media Interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of women who have actually touched the Doctor's TARDIS and lived to tell the tale. In the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Strangely, you haven't completely experienced the 2014 edition of actor Peter Capaldi without seeing him inhabit the words, opinions, and insights of one of the greatest artists and thinkers of all time, Leonardo da Vinci. In a new documentary, Inside the Mind of Leonardo da Vinci 3D, Capaldi breathes life into one of the greatest dreamers and creators the world has ever known. And, along the way, he lends da Vinci a touch of his Doctor Who-inspired madness. Since none of us will ever hear da Vinci speak, we can certainly grant Capaldi license to present da Vinci's actual words as he sees fit. He does so with such great energy and invention, plus a little touch of Shakespeare, that his performance will no doubt draw in a generation of young people who might not otherwise have given the great works of Leonardo da Vinci a second thought. This interview is audio only, a break from our normal video format, but once you hear the star of BBC and BBC America's Doctor Who speak extemporaneously about da Vinci and the Doctor, you'll have no doubt with whom I'm speaking. And if this is your first experience with Mr. Media Interviews, I hope you'll consider subscribing at MrMedia.com so you'll never miss another one. Peter Capaldi, welcome to Mr. Media.
Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Peter, the mind of Leonardo, larger on the inside?
I think that's certainly true, yeah. I think this is a real genuine article. This is a genius, a man whose perception and understanding of the world is way, way, way bigger than anybody else's at the time.
Now, as Inside the Mind of Leonardo opens, you appear and you talk to the viewer. At first it's like, what's going on here? But you speak in the actual words of Leonardo, but the message and the tone, especially the farting reference early on, I thought it sounded like it could have been you. It's very interesting. You seem very comfortable in his voice.
Well, the thing is, every word that that I say is his. So it's quite unusual in that respect, because it is actually all directly from his writing. I mean, Nick Deer has done a great job of arranging it and editing it, but basically it's all Leonardo's his own words. So we were sort of anxious to try and get a flavor of what he might have been like. I mean, the trouble with someone like Leonardo da Vinci is everyone sort of thinks he's God, basically. Mm. You know, it's hard to get a sense of what the real man was like. And, of course, what makes him a genius is not just all the fabulous things that he came up with and the fabulous works of art, but he produced, but the fact that he was a regular human being, you know, or a super regular human being, that he had frailties and challenges and anxieties. So we just tried to make him as accessible as possible.
Did you experiment any more or less with the tone and the speech pattern for Leonardo than you would have with a different type of role?
Not really, because I mean the nature of the dialogue of the words is they impose a certain kind of discipline on it, because obviously it was written 500 years ago, so it has a certain baroqueness to it. So I try to leaven that by making it as conversational as possible, because clearly it's you know, A, from another language, and B, 500 years old. So I just work all the time to try and make things that might be technically quite challenging appear quite natural.
Would it be a compliment, or would it be an insult if I said that at times I felt like you were delivering Leonardo the way an actor might deliver Hamlet, that it's that...
I think that would be a compliment, and I would appreciate that very deeply. Thank you very much. Very kind of you to say. There is a kind of Shakespearean tone to it, but that's also because it's just me who's there. There are no other characters, so he, you know, he is communing with himself a lot of the time in his writing, and so there are soliloquies, a lot of them. So you have to try and bring them to life in that way.
Yeah, I actually came away from it wanting to hear more in his voice, because, you know, we know his art, we know his work, but obviously there's no recordings of him. So to hear you speaking as him, it's very engaging. You know.
Well, that's kind of you to say. It's a fascinating idea. It's very rare. I mean, rather like Shakespeare, he was kind of mysterious. Even though he's left behind all this writing and all of these works, the actual man himself remains a bit of an enigma, as Shakespeare does. So you're forever looking for clues to who he was, to what he was actually like. When he walked into a room, how did people respond? What did people like him? Did they dislike him? Was he comfortable with people? Was he nervous? Was he arrogant? And I think that one of the things that I learned from all of the notes that we had access to was that he was, you know, found life quite difficult. You know, he had this great drive, an almost narcotic obsession about understanding the world and nature, which was also coupled with an artistic view of the world, so that he could look at things and be figuring out how they worked as well as how they looked, you know, and how best to render them, how best to paint them or draw them, while at the same time, you know, calculating how they might actually function as machines. He's an absolutely fascinating character. You know, the word genius is bandied around a great deal nowadays, but this is the genuine article, I think.
Well, I was thinking of him in terms of today, that like a Stephen Hawking would be in that.
Well, he would be if he could paint, you know, if he was also capable of, you know, writing Beethoven's Fifth or painting Guernica.
Right.
You know, if Stephen Hawking could do those things, then you'd be getting close to someone of the stature of Leonardo da Vinci.
Well, and speaking of
if Einstein could, if Einstein could, you know, paint the Sistine Chapel.
Oh, maybe he could. Maybe he just never had the opportunity.
Never had the brushes.
Well, speaking of the brushes, tell me about the guys who guided the script and the cinematography of the documentary, Nick and Julian.
Yeah.
What did they bring to
the film? Yeah, well, they were great. I mean, I you know, one of the things, you know, a movie like this is, you know, you have to try and make it not a lecture. You have to find a way to bring it to life. And I think both by Julian's selection of the speeches and the material that we used, and what really impressed me about it was the way that Julian was able to make quite an epic film out of something that was, in some ways, a kind of internalized story. It was a kind of internalized dialogue, you know, that Leonardo was having with himself. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I was knocked out by these views of us flying over Tuscan landscapes, you know, that were so real with the 3D quality that you felt, you know, you could feel the cold air in your mouth or the splash of the spray from the mountain streams. And also all the modern footage of Florence and the vigor of Italian life that still goes on in these cities, which seems quite unchanged, you know, from Leonardo's day. And I thought that was very imaginative, the way they brought all of these elements together, as well as the creation of the computer-generated recreations of some of his most famous inventions, etc. And I thought it was a very, very imaginative film. And, in one way, it would be wonderful to see a version of Leonardo's life with the full, you know, with the tights and the hair and the whole, you know, Florence reproduced as it was. That would be, but, you know, clearly that wasn't the way we were going. And I think there was an almost theatrical ambition about ours, which is very unusual and very satisfying.
Well, there's a moment later in the film that I enjoyed and I wanted to ask you about. You start, I'll use your word, you start a soliloquy. They're short, but and you start it and you stop, and then there's a second take and you do it again and a third take and I think maybe a fourth take. And I wondered, was that in the script? Was that planned, or was that just a great theatrical moment that the Julian.
No, I think that was just written. That was what he was repeating. Mm. You know, he would often get into the written word is different from the spoken word. So this is stuff that he wrote down, and I had to generate a microclimate in which we could believe he was saying it. But he'd written many of the things with an emphasis on particular keywords and key phrases, so he would repeat those phrases over and over again. I wonder whether he was like that in life. I don't know, but that's all I was doing. Was finding different ways to play the same phrases that he. So that's very kind of you to elevate it to a piece of a theatrical invention. It was just a way of bringing it to life.
Well, not having all of his written works in front of me or the script, I had to ask.
I didn't
have a way to know.
Was
there were there other places in the film where you felt that you had especially brought something more than just reading, you know, reading his words? Because it's a performance; it's not a reading. But was there another point?
Well, I think I enjoyed his sort of presentation to, I can't remember which duke it was, but he, clearly when, you know, it was necessary in order to survive, to do what he had to do to receive the patronage of somebody important, somewhere who had a lot of money. And I think it was the first lord he goes in pursuit of, and he basically has to audition for him. And has to audition by describing all of the wonderful war machines that he's capable of coming up with. I enjoyed that very much because I knew that it was clearly he was in preparation for a presentation that he had to do. He was like, you know, in Don Draper mode, you know, trying to find the best way to sell himself. And I thought that was interesting because you sort of never, you know, Leonardo da Vinci, everybody, you just always think he's sort of immune to nervousness or lack of confidence or whatever. But it was clear from the writing that he was concerned that he might not be able to pull off that particular gig, which I think he did. So that was fun, sort of doing that audition. And lots of, you know, I loved his exploration of the body. I loved the kind of sense of his sexuality. You know, we're constantly looking for areas that bring him to life, you know, that make him a real person,
and how much,
as opposed to a god.
I'm sorry, Peter. How much did you know about Leonardo before this came up, and how did you happen to choose or be drawn to this project?
Well, I think I knew quite a lot about him because I'd been to art school, and he's an interesting figure. You know, he's one of the greatest artists of the Renaissance. So obviously, I knew him from my studies at college. But he remained a sort of elusive and mysterious soul. And so when they asked me to play him, it just kind of ticked all the boxes. I also liked the way that it wasn't a slavish. I liked the way we weren't, you know, getting into a pair of tights and some stuck-on beards and trying to recreate the period. I liked the way it was a sort of proxy. I'm a sort of proxy Leonardo, and I'm a sort of vessel, a conduit, really, for his words and hopefully something of a notion of his character, rather than an attempt to present, you know, a finished picture of the man. So I thought that was a very interesting means of doing it, and it also, it's a great job because you have, you have all of these. It's quite a responsibility. You have a lot of very, very big speeches, which you have to color. Mm-hmm. You have to give the right flavor to, and that's a great challenge.
And would you...
I mean, it did remind me of a play. It was kind of like a play in some respects. It was the amount of words I had to learn, and I had to be able to perform them, you know, in one go. There's not a lot of cutting in the speeches. So it was quite challenging and enjoyable from that point of view.
Would you like to return to the mind of Leonardo in the future, or maybe you would consider doing one of the other Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles at some point?
Yeah, Michelangelo might be interesting. Yeah, I know. Well, they're all coming back now, aren't they? They're all back in vogue.
Yeah.
I think there was talk afoot of me doing, Michelangelo next. But my other job is sort of takes up a lot of time, so it's hard for me to do that at the moment.
Right. Well, and if you'd indulge me, I'd like to wrap up and ask you just one or two questions about your other job. As the 12th Doctor. This past 18 months or so, I'm sure, has been rather life-changing, and I wondered if you've had maybe a moment of reflection. Has there been any part of you that's thought, you know, maybe this is too much life-changing to become the Doctor? Maybe I shouldn't have done this?
No. It was too much I sensed that fate was at work, and that whatever was going to happen, I would not have been being true to myself if I'd turned away from it. I don't think anything.
Okay.
There's nothing about it that I find negative. You know, it's been a very, very positive experience because I'm working with great people, and it's a great fun experience, you know. It's and it has its challenges, and not everybody likes me, but a lot of people do, and that's a lovely position to be in, you know.
Well, we like you in our house. My daughter especially wanted me to let you know how much she adores your eyebrows.
that's so sweet of her. Tell her thank you very much. And I'm sure I would like her eyebrows if I saw them.
I'm sure that you would. You know, the week that you were announced as the new Doctor, my wife and my daughter Rachel and I, we were actually in London, and we went to the Doctor Who Experience, and it was the week that they opened the TARDIS for tours. And I wondered, I was so impressed by being there with it, but I wondered, when you entered that set for the first time, and being a Doctor Who fan yourself, how excited were you to actually put your hands on it and feel, oh my goodness, this is mine for a while?
It was hugely exciting, and the first time I did it really was with Matt when we actually shot the changeover between his doctor and my doctor. So there, it's kind of his TARDIS at that point when he's still there, and then we physically have to change places.
Right.
And it's quite an emotional time, you know, for him and for everybody, and because they've all been working together for a long time, and then suddenly there's this new guy there. But yeah, so I find it very exciting. I mean, the funny thing about it was people kept very kindly props men, very kindly technicians would keep telling me which switches to pull and which, you know, how to operate the TARDIS. I didn't like to say to them that they didn't have to tell me how to operate the TARDIS, that I knew how to operate the TARDIS already. Because I've been watching it for years and knew exactly where to put my hands. It's vastly, it's hugely exciting. It's and you know, there are just some moments where you just really feel that you're Doctor Who, and it's and there are very few people in the world that get the chance to do that outside of the playground.
Exactly. Well, a final question, and I'll let you go. And you've been very gracious with your time.
There will
come a day, of course, when your time as a Doctor will end. There'll be a regeneration.
Yeah.
Someone new will step up.
Yeah.
How will you want your time in the world to be remembered, Peter?
I would like it to be mysterious and magical and fun. And I think it's always like that. So that's just the way, that's what Doctor Who is. I would like it to be remembered as Doctor Who should be, you know, as a piece of mysterious magic in the world.
Well, folks, you can find the documentary Inside the Mind of Leonardo, starring Peter Capaldi as Leonardo da Vinci, in selected theaters in New York and Los Angeles on December 19th, with a general release to follow. And eventually look for it in great stores everywhere, and you'll be able to order it at a great price at MrMedia.com. Peter Capaldi, just a great honor to have your time, and thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye-bye. I'm not going out tonight. I'm going to sit at home in the dark. Watch the lights on the streets now. Turn out the stereo receiver. Turn your back on the deceiver. It's a bad idea to believe her. A bad idea to believe her. Turn up the stereo receiver. Turn up the stereo receiver.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment. Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at BuzzBurbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, welcome to the George and Tony Entertainment Show. Prepare for awesome mediocrity.
We're the Cousin Oliver of the Realm Network. I'm George.
And I'm Tony.
And we're a weekly family-friendly podcast about pop culture.
From our point of view.
At RealmNetwork.com. The George and Tony Entertainment Show. From the Realm Network.
This is Snake. Do you read me, Otacon?
Loud and clear, Snake.
Did you listen to the latest episode of the Gaming Marathon on the Realm Network?
Of course.
They really know their stuff about gaming, especially that Usid guy.
Yeah, but that Chirac guy is a real jerk. I don't like him.
Regardless, the reviews are spot on and they tell it like it is.
That's for sure.
What happened, Snake? Were you spotted?
Nah, it's just Lil Meltzer crying about the O's again.
Close call.
I better continue the search for Metal Gear, but keep listening to the Gaming Marathon each week.
You got it, Snake.
New every Monday afternoon right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk and they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
These are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot. Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
Resistance is futile. It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network. And catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights.